Houston Dynamo, Portland Timbers, Sporting Kansas, Los Angeles Galaxy, Beach Pass, this is your boys. Toronto FC, Real Salt Lake, this is my red, white, and blue. Chicago Fire, this is my anthem to you. Columbus Crew, FC Dallas, New York Red Bulls.
Pitch Pass, your all-access credential to the people that matter in MLS. Here's your host, Greg Roach.
Welcome to Pitch Pass. We got a good one lined up, so I can't even... Well, I can. PitchPass.com is where you're going to find everything about the show and my usual iTunes push. If you've subscribed through iTunes, thank you. If you haven't, why don't you subscribe through iTunes? Then it'll just be right there when you open it up again, and you won't even have to go looking for the show. And then, once you do that, tell some friends, and then rate the show or leave a comment. That's all I'm going to ask you to do today. Oh, wait, PitchPass.com. I told you to go there. Sebastian Salazar just posted a really enlightening column on why the CONCACAF Champions League is actually hurting itself. Well, why CONCACAF is hurting the Champions League. It's an interesting read. Go check it out. We'll actually talk about it in just a little bit with Sebastian Salazar. I'm sorry, NBC Sports Network's Sebastian Salazar, also Houston's Comcast Sports Network. But let's focus on the national. NBC Sports Network Sebastian Salazar will join us in a little bit. But first, we head up to New Jersey, home of New York Red Bulls, to talk to the coach. Mike Petke joins us on Pitch Pass. Mike, how are you? Coach, how are you, sir?
Roach, what's going on, dude?
Wait, do I call you coach? Do I have to call you coach now?
Shut up. just call me Mike, man. What's going on, dude?
Do you remember the days where you would just pop by the radio station and we just hang out? Now I've got to go through your people to get to you. Soon, Mike, when this podcast blows up, you're going to have to go through my people, and then my people have to get in touch with your people. It's going to be a huge thing.
Yeah, well, listen, I'll never go through your people. My people will go through your people. How about that?
Yeah, well,
how are you doing, dude?
I'm great. You know, when we talked earlier, this was in preseason, you guys were just getting on a flight back to New York. And I know you didn't go into this with your eyes closed, but has this been a little bit harder than even you probably imagined or prepared yourself for?
I wouldn't say harder. I would definitely say different. Definitely very different. Obviously, when we talked last time, I was interim coach. Just before that, I was interim coach. And, you know, I was trying to prepare the team for whoever was going to take over. So, and then all of a sudden, it's given to me just like that in the blink of an eye. So it was definitely a lot to handle. I would like to think that I've gotten more comfortable in my skin. I've grown a lot in the last 6-7 months. But listen, I'm in New York, you know, with the Red Bull, a major corporation, billion-dollar company with, you know, big players. And it's tough, you know, but you learn a little bit every day. You keep learning.
Did you have that in your mind when you were doing the interim thing and when you first got the job that this isn't just coaching a team? This is coaching a team, a marquee franchise in an American league with the billion-dollar corporation behind it.
Well, of course, but the thing that I had, the one thing I had going for me is that I wasn't a guy coming from, you know, some little town in St. Louis to, you know, the big city and the big corporation. I was playing for this. Mm-hmm. I've been a part of this organization for, you know, over 10 years. So it wasn't like a complete shock like that, but to be pretty much told one day that you're in charge now, yeah, of course. You know, there was that deer in the headlights for a second, that excitement / nervousness / you know, pressure right on you. But, you know, listen, at the end of the day, I want what Red Bull wants and what the players want, you know, is to have this perhaps more than new players, you know, because I've been involved so long, is that I want this team to succeed, you know, first and foremost, above my own personal gains and above anything else. So, you know, it's been an interesting ride so far, but that's still the main goal, and Rome wasn't built in a day, so we're just constantly trying to chip away at it and get to that goal.
Where do you feel you've grown the most since you took the reins?
Oh, God. Besides my tolerance, come home and have a couple drinks after a very tough day. I've learned so much. And, you know, I have a guy like Robin Fraser as assistant coach who has more head coaching experience than me and more coaching experience. He's assistant coach at Salt Lake for so long. I have a guy, Andy Roxburgh, who I've been a technical director of all of UEFA in Europe for 30 years with a wealth of experience. So I've grown the most through those two people specifically, which is the ideas they give me, the patience that Andy has with me to sit me down and give me, you know, and pat me on the back, but also, you know, light a fire under my ass. And also just pass along his ideas and me be able to take those and put my own spin on it and try to make this, put my own identity on the team. So I think in my knowledge of the game and my willingness to understand that I am new at this and I need to learn a lot and I have the right people around me, I think that's been, you know, the biggest thing for me so far.
Well, let me ask you from a different way. I'm going to assume that you felt tactically, sure, you would learn a little more than you brought in when you got the job, but I would assume tactically you had ideas on how you wanted to play and what kind of style you wanted to what kind of coach you wanted to be and the style that you wanted to play. I always thought in the back of my mind your challenge would be just trying to find out where that filter is between the frankness and the jocularity of being a player and then transferring that personality into being a coach. Am I wrong to think that that was one of the reasons or one of the areas that you felt like you needed to grow in your first year as a head coach?
Yes. I'll tell you, all this months later, since being named, I'm still the same person, and that is a good and a bad. To be honest with you, I'm still on the sideline, losing my mind at every second. And I know that there's going to come a point in the future that I'm gonna change. I'm going to become more of a thing, put things in perspective and get through the game. I just, you know, one thing I said to my wife when I got the job, you know, not long after, I said, I can't change who I am. I can't become a seasoned veteran coach mentally. Personality-wise, overnight, I don't want to become that guy. I know most likely I have to, or I'm going to have a heart attack on the sideline one day, but I stay true to myself. This is what I'm passionate about. If I'm still the same guy that when I played, if I thought things, you know, if I thought the ref made a bad call or if I thought a player was doing the wrong thing, I tell him. You know, I'm still the same guy that pulls up to a red light when it turns green and I go and a guy runs the red light. I'm going to chase that guy down, as horrible as that is. It's just the way I am. So that way, I'm probably not where I should be, to be honest with you, but as long as I'm staying true to myself, I'm okay with that right now. I know I'm going to grow in that aspect at some point, but I need to stay true to myself.
Are you glad that fall is coming or here so that you can now reintroduce your new line of sweaters for the sideline?
I'll tell you, before the DC game, I've become very superstitious. And it's something that I prided myself on throughout my career. I was the most non-superstitious person in the world. Now I have rituals. Now my wife has rituals. It's ridiculous. So when I wore those sweater vests, which is what I like to wear, I just, you know, become enamored with them for whatever reason. And then it got hot. You know, I've heard supporters and people tell me, oh, when you wore the sweater vest, we didn't lose this and that. So, yeah, but it's 98 degrees out, you know? So before the D.C. game, it was a little cloudy at my house and the night before, and I said to my wife, I said, well, I think we should break out a real thin sweater vest. Man, it was so damn hot at that game in D.C. I'm so glad I didn't wear it. But yeah, I missed the sweater vest, my man. I'm looking forward to the fall coming. You're absolutely right.
Well, you know, I would say if I'm you, I'm looking around and I go, all right, Benny's got some style. Kreiss, obviously, mm-hmm. Maybe the standard right now for best-dressed coaches in MLS. Caleb Porter, a very underratedly good dresser. And if I'm you, I'm thinking to myself, how am I going to set myself apart while still being a good dresser? And I love that you went with the sweaters.
Of course, you know, but it's not something that I just picked out of the blue. You know, you can ask our supporters for the last 3 years, the Christmas parties I went to, I've always had a sweater
all right
vest on. I enjoy them, you know. I think it's something that I loved for a long time, but could never pull them off back in the day. I didn't have the confidence, and now I don't give a crap what people say. To be honest with you, I enjoy wearing them.
I want to ask you some updates on some of your players. The Tim Cahill news came out today. What kind of spirits is he in? And just give us an update, an official update from the coach on how long he's going to be out for.
Well, I mean, we're looking at 3 to 4 weeks. He has a tear in a ligament in his ankle. And the one thing, you know, talk about how his spirits are. I mean, Tim's a very positive person. But, you know, now we're looking at two, in the last 3 months, we're looking at two pretty bad tackles from players that have knocked him out of commission for extended period of time that have gone unpunished. I don't think that Yakovich is a dirty player at all. You know, I think it was a bad tackle. I think the gotta watch what I say here. I think it's interesting that after the goal was scored, there was no going back to that play and either a warning or a card issued. And I'm not surprised that most likely it's not even going to be reviewed this week. You know, you go back to Salt Lake, the game against Salt Lake almost two and a half months ago, whatever it was, it was a knee-high challenge that Tim tore his PCL. And it wasn't reviewed. It was refused to be reviewed from the league a couple days later. I mean, this is a main player for ours who plays hard and gets these two tackles on him, and, you know, it doesn't seem to be an issue. Anyway, that's my little rant, Roach. I'm sorry. But he'll be out for 3 to 4 weeks. Then we have Roy Miller, who has a bit of an issue with his Achilles. We're looking at another around 3 weeks. Connor Lade is looking at 2 weeks with his knee. And Brandon Barklage is a day-to-day. He felt something in his glute the days leading up to the DC game, and we gave him a test right before the game. He says he feels fine. He's ready to go. And then, you know, within 15 minutes, he pulled up lame, so that was unfortunate. So we're a little bit battered, but we're okay. We have guys waiting in the wings that want to step into those roles and show what they could do.
Now, I don't know if I'm sure you've looked at the film already. Even in as it happened live, and I'm talking about the Cahill injury, number one, I don't know how it wasn't a penalty kick. And then number two, I don't know how you don't go back later on, like you said, after the goal and take a card out, because as I'm watching the replay, the ref is literally 5 feet away, and he is dead staring. Like, he almost gets into the crouch and is looking at the play as it develops. And I'm thinking to myself, you're looking right at it. There's nowhere else that you could be looking. What do you do when you see a replay like that?
I mean, honestly, I lose my mind. In the moment, looking back on it, like I said, you know, if he was playing the advantage because the ball did pop out to Lloyd Sam in the box. If he's playing the advantage, and that was if he would have called the penalty kick, but he's playing the advantage, well, that obviously doesn't even make sense either. I don't know what he was thinking, you know? And if he was playing the advantage and we did score the goal then, which we did, then not to go back and issue a card or at least have a talk with it, you know? But at the end of the day, I've learned my lesson, you know? I'm not going to spout off, you know, in the press conference about it. I was very irritated. I still am very irritated that we're losing him for this long, and, you know, not even a thought went across, looked like not a thought went across the mind to call that PK. It was clearly it was clearly showing his cleats into his ankle, and now he's got a torn ligament.
When and you're fully expecting the disciplinary committee to just kind of bypass this?
I mean,
you'd love it.
If I had to rate this with the Salt Lake tackle that was knee high that tore his PCL. They told us they chose not to review that, so I can't imagine they're reviewing this. Like I said, I want to make it clear, I don't think he's a dirty player. You know, I think that it was a bad challenge, and he got him in the ankle, but it was studs up, and it should be reviewed, but I'm not holding my breath that it is. It's not going to cure his ankle, so if they don't, whatever.
Let me ask you this, and then we'll move on. You say that you were told by them, that the league, that they chose not to review it. When I hear that, I think to myself, wait a second, how can you choose not to review something? What do you think that means, we chose not to review it?
Well, what I think it means is that I think that because it has to go to the disciplinary committee for an official review, which is a 5-person panel. And for something like that to be either overturned or something to be awarded, from what I understand, I could be wrong, it has to be a unanimous decision. So I'm sure that there's somebody beforehand, I'm sure they get hundreds of calls a week from all the teams about, you know, you need to review this, you need to review that. So they probably have somebody looking at all these things, and then it has to go through that person to get to the disciplinary committee. Now, again, this is just a guess.
Yeah.
So when we got word, we put an official thing saying we'd like this play reviewed, and they said, you know, we're not going to review it, or they might have said we reviewed it and we didn't see anything wrong with it. I'm not sure which one. But it just, you know, listen, I know they have a tough job. I'm not criticizing, all right, or anything. I don't need any more money out of my pocket for fines, you know, but I just, you know, it's one person's opinion, which is mine, against other people's opinion, which is theirs. And I see something wrong, they don't. We move on, I guess.
Let's talk about Bradley Wright Phillips. I have to be honest, when I heard that he was coming in for a trial with you guys, I thought to myself, okay, I'm not going to get really excited. And if it works out, it works out. But I gotta admit, he was very, very lively in his first match with you guys against DC United over the weekend. You had to have been happy with what you saw. Is for him, it's just going to be a matter of getting up to the speed of the league and getting his full fitness?
Yes, I think so. I think that we saw so much potential in him, and he has played at a very good level over in England. We saw so much potential in him when he came over here. His speed, his explosiveness, his willingness, his offensive mindset, which as I call it, which I love that players that they think about going forward first before they look to play a lateral pass or backwards. He just always constantly getting the ball and wants to go forward. And his nose around the goal in practices. With every player that comes over from any other league in the world, no matter how good that league is, EPL, the La Liga, anything, MLS is very different. You know, let's start with the off-field stuff, that the travel that we go through, you know, compared to those leagues. On top of that, you know, the speed of play, what perhaps at times this league lacks in finesse with, you know, ball skill and this and that, which we do have a lot of, but what we lack a little bit in that, it's a run-and-gun game. It's very physical. And it takes a lot of guys time to get used to. So we brought him along as slowly as we could, and I felt it was the right time to put him in there, and I was very happy with the way he played, you know? More happy with him listening to what we expected of him and putting the effort in to do the things we asked of him, and he did a very good job.
And now you add Lloyd Sam, who's been with the team the whole year, but kind of in and out of the lineup, Fabian and Henri. You got to like your options up front as far as attacking.
Yeah, I do. I definitely do. You know, the one thing, you know, at the end of the day, these guys, I believe, know by this time now, I've been preaching all year that, you know, there's nothing, especially when it comes to me and my history with this organization, there's absolutely no agenda, there's absolutely no personal issues whatsoever. I'm going to put the best players that I feel are going to get a result that weekend, you know, and it's going to help this club win. You know, it could be my mom and my dad and my brother and sister on the roster. If they're not cutting it, I'm going to bench them, and the Christmas dinner will suck. But, you know, at the end of the day, I want to do what's best for this club. So they do know that. So it is very nice to have options, you know, at your disposal. And it's great to see them battle it out for 5 days in between games.
Now, having said that, I think one of the things that will be leveled against Red Bulls as maybe a missing part is that creative central attacking midfielder. Would your response to that be as maybe what is missing from the Red Bull attack?
Well, I mean, if anybody has been watching all year and saw how we started the season and what type of formation we played, went through the whole preseason, and what we are now, we quickly changed back to a 4-4-2. It's obviously because of that aspect right there. And it's not because we haven't looked. It's not because we haven't tried. It's not easy just to pick up somebody, and we weren't willing to settle for somebody that we weren't 100% sure on. So we are a 4-4-2 team. And it's not to say that we won't go to, you know, three forwards at one point, you know, within a game or for one opponent. You know, but the players that we have, the personalities and the abilities, we're a 4-4-2 team. Structured two lines of defense, back four, midfield four, and guys like Thierry Henry, guys like you know, Tim Cahill charging late from the box, Eric Alexander, Fabian, who could make a, you know, bring that small quality that could be a game changer. And yes, of course, I know that. You know, we realized that very quickly. But you work with what you have, and I'm very happy with what I have. I love the guys on the team; they're all good in what they do. But we are a team that is lacking that real creative spark from behind the lines, and we're a 4-4-2 team. And that's why anybody who's been watching has seen Thierry Henry dropping back over the last 5-6 games behind the other forward to be that, to pretty much be that creative force for us. It's worked out great at times, other times it hasn't. So we are, you know, we have options, and we're trying to move them around the best way we can.
Henri dropping back, like you said, is that the ideal scenario for you, or is that something where you're doing out of necessity?
A little bit of both, you know. Not, I wouldn't use the word necessity. It's definitely not necessity. Anytime you have a guy like Thierry Henri, who anybody could say anything they want about him. You know, he's whatever. I've read things about he's getting on in age. He's lost a step, which is all funny to me. But anytime you have someone like that who could change a game in the snap of a finger, you know, you want him with the ball to feet as much as possible. So we became a point that we said, you know, we're playing a 4-4-2. Why can't it turn into like a 4-4-1-1? You know, I guess you could label it like that, where he could drop in and almost be a fifth midfielder, you know, and force their center backs to make a decision, force their midfielders to make a decision. They're going to leave Dax, they're going to leave Tim to cover Thierry. Is the center back going to charge out and try to get on him and create that gap that, you know, Fabian or Bradley or Peggy could exploit? And we've done that, and we've had some success with that. But at the end of the day, like I said, you work. What I'm learning is, what I've learned is, you work with what you have, and you try to put him in the best situation. It doesn't always work out, but as long as you're trying new things and you're trying to do what's best for the team, you know, you could always, it could only be a positive result.
This league is just filled with teams who are constantly in and out of form. It's the nature of the beast and the way that the league is set up. You're the coach of the Red Bulls, though, so I need to ask you about the Red Bulls and why haven't you guys been consistent throughout the season, and what do you guys need to do to maintain some level of consistency as we head to the crucial part of the season?
Well, listen, if I had that answer, I'd be coaching at Barcelona. You know, if I could give you a solid answer and fix it and be you know, and win 25 games because of it, I'd be set for life. It's an enigma, you know. I have many things on my mind why that happens, you know. It's a mentality thing. How do we beat Montreal 4-0, beat Salt Lake 3-2, beat Kansas City 3-2 in Kansas City,
and then
lose to tie Toronto, lose to Columbus on the road, lose to Chivas on the road. You know, sometimes I think maybe we play to the ability of our opponent. That's no disrespect to the three teams that I said we lost to at all. You know, this league is really made up of parity. They really want parity. They want any given day, any team could win, and I think they do a good job at creating that. But with the talent that we have, with the talent that certain teams have, to go into places and lose is mind-boggling at times, to be honest with you. And I've always taken blame for most of it. You know, I'm the coach. I have to prepare the team better. I have to go back after those, scratch my head, go back to the drawing board and find out what we did that week and what worked and what didn't work. And it's an enigma, to be honest with you. I don't have that answer.
Mike, why do you and Thierry hate each other?
Listen, I knew something was going to come up about that. But you definitely voiced it in a phenomenal way, my friend. Well, because he's a huge personality, and I'm a very volatile, emotional person. So you put those two together in a room, and it's great TV. No, I mean, I respect Thierry, and he knows this more than anything, and I know that I have the respect factor from him as well. Thierry wants to win more than anybody. He wants things done right. He wants things done perfectly. That's probably one of the biggest reasons why he's attained all the things he has in his career. At the end of the day, sometimes emotions boil over. If last Thursday I had a fight with or an argument with pick anybody else on the team besides Cahill and Thierry, it wouldn't have made hardly any news. You know, but because it's Thierry, it became blown out of proportion. And mind you, these are things that happen all the time on every team in every sport in the world. You know, but because it's, you know, Thierry Henry and a first-year coach and New York, and there was reporters there, it became something more than it's not. You know, he wants to win, I want to win. Our emotions boiled over. Within 20 minutes after that, everything's fine.
Name a coach that you had a training ground flare up like that with when you were playing.
That's different. That's different.
What do you mean? Like, you said it happens all the time. I'm sure at some point in your career, you're a fiery personality. At some point, you know, you probably had like a little bit of a bust up with a coach as well, correct?
Listen, I grew up as fiery and as emotional as I am. I grew up under the iron thumb of Mr. Ed Pecky, my father. The most blue-collar, old-school person that you will ever meet.
Mm-hmm.
I never batted an eye to him. And from that right there, throughout my career, I always looked at my coaches as almost a father figure. So So as angry as I've gotten in the past, and I never add anything in front of the team. I never lashed out at my coach. And I'm not saying it's a wrong thing to do. Sometimes you need some of that bowling board. So they ask me if I've ever clashed with somebody. The closest I probably came was Peter Novak at D.C. And because he's very similar to my personality as well. Never went on the training ground, never went crazy, but we've had some pretty intense with Peter backdoor, backroom blowouts. But you could name so many in this league alone, if not around the world, that happens. It has to do with a personality thing. Now that I'm in charge, it's different. Yeah. I don't have the only person that's like a father figure to me is Andy Roxburgh, Gerard Houllier, and Mr. Mateschitz, who's the owner of Red Bull. And I would certainly never raise an eye to them. Anybody else is fair game.
So let me ask you this. As I'm an MLS fan. You know who my favorite team is, but I try to be a fan of the league, and I try to support the league. And when Thierry Henry came over, it was exciting. And he's done a lot of exciting things on the pitch. But then he's also done some things, and I've talked with Dax McCarty about this on the record. And, I ask him, hey, what's it like when he's telling you guys off during the middle of a match? And it's frustrating as a fan of the league to see him have an attitude of, and I know he's very decorated player, but being almost above the rest of the players on the pitch. So I'm going to ask you, Coach Pecky, how should I feel about Thierry Henry as a player in MLS only? And this is not as an uber Red Bull fan, but as a fan of MLS.
Well, I think, honestly, as a fan of MLS, definitely as a fan of Red Bull, but close to equally as a fan of MLS, you should feel fortunate that a guy like Thierry Henry came over here still in his prime and is a part of this, and no matter what it looks like from the outside, is still in this league and is dedicated to this league. That's honestly how I feel. You know, you look at, I mean, there's honestly so many things I would like to say. Thierry is the type of guy, no matter what he's accomplished in his life, no matter who he is, how much money he makes, he wants to tell Dax on the field, what the F were you doing there? And he wants Dax to yell at him, shut the F up and get back to your work. That's what he wants, to use Dax as an example, any player. The problem is that when you have a guy like Thierry who is up on a pedestal because of what he's accomplished, it's difficult for guys, I hate to throw the money thing, it's difficult for a guy making $40,000, $50,000, $60,000, $100,000, $200,000 to have a guy who's making $4.5, $5 million, whatever Thierry's making, $5.3 I think it might be, and understand that and do that. And at the end of the day, my thought process is that he's one of 30 players on the roster or 28 players on the roster. He wants that. Now, not to say that if Dax yells that or someone yells that back to him, he's not going to come back at them, but they're all in this together. And if he's going to push him, he's going to push him back. It's only going to make us better. And I think that the problem lies in the league, the world, the team creates something out of Thierry, which he's earned, but it puts him above a lot of the players.
Well, look at how
that uncomfortable.
Look at how after every match, and you're privy to, you have a front row seat, there is a sprint from the other team to get to him to do the jersey swap.
Oh, it blows my mind. It blows my mind. The only time I've traded jerseys in this league was for people that I played with, Pablo Mascherini, Ben Olsen, we changed jerseys with, guys like that. Or even take it a step further, guys that I've marked throughout my career, at the end of my career, Landon Donovan, I marked my whole career, Carlos Ruiz, players like that, or for an international game. It's crazy. Guys are almost talking about it beforehand, and that's what I'm talking about, that you have a player on a pedestal. Same thing with David Beckham. Same thing with Lothar Matthäus when he played here. Players like that they're on a bit of a pedestal, and I like to think that this league has come a lot farther from those days, and it should be a little less of that. But I guess at the end of the day, a guy like Thierry, who's won everything possible in the world, there is that aurora, there is that, appeal that he has to the other players.
Speaking of bust-ups, at the end of the match on Saturday, was there any any fear, any concern that you and Ben were going to have to roll up the sleeves and fight?
Oh, that's a great question.
Thank you.
Ben came over to my office afterwards, and he gave me the heads up. He said, I want to let you know, I told the press that, you know, if it got physical, that he would have whooped my butt, you know? And it was funny. Listen, Ben's a dear friend of mine, you know? He's a guy I played with. He's a guy I came in the league with. I've spent personal time with over the years with not only him and I myself, but the families. And he's a guy I respect very much. And I know there's a mutual respect there as well. But once that whistle blows for 90 minutes, to go back, I made this reference before. If my mom or dad was coaching the other team, the gloves are off.
Yeah.
You know, it's nothing personal. So in that moment, I took issue with something that happened, and he didn't see any issue with it at all. After the game, we laughed about it. He explained his side, I explained my side, and everything's great, you know? But there's for sure many things Ben could do better in life than I can. Art, very good artist. Crack a joke, he's funnier than I am. So at times he's a better dresser than me. Listen, sitting down and having drinks with me or going toe-to-toe to fight with me, put your money on me, guys.
I almost feel like you could do the old cartoon thing where you just put your hand on his head and he just swings because he can't reach you. That's what I feel like would happen.
But the problem is, before it got physical, he'd make me laugh, and then he'd probably sucker punch me. That would be the problem right there.
And Mike, I gotta tip my cap to you. I don't know if you knew that the cameras were on you. There was a hot mic around you. No obscenities during that exchange. Very well done, Mike.
Well, listen, I usually see black or see red, I guess you could say, during those things. So I don't recall what I said, but I'm very shocked that you didn't hear an obscenity come out of my mouth.
Well, Mike,
very shocked.
Mike, I appreciate it, man. I know we're doing this a little late, and I thank you for being so generous with your time. And hopefully we'll talk again at some point down the road, my friend.
Roach, listen, man, anytime you want, buddy. I miss you, and I'm glad you're doing well down in D.C., my man.
Appreciate it, man. Take it easy.
Be good.
That's the coach, Mike Petke, New York Red Bulls head coach. I don't think, did you know that? Okay, good. As we move a little further south, we head down to Houston and talk CONCACAF Champions League, Houston Dynamo, and whatever else is on his mind with Sebastian Salazar. Sebi!
Hey, what's going on, man?
I just didn't know how to introduce you at the top of the show before we had Mike Petke on. Are you Comcast Sportsnet Houston Sebastian Salazar, or are you NBC Sports Network Sebastian Salazar? I don't even know how to intro you these days.
I am Comcast Sportsnet Houston Sebastian Salazar, but as you know, the corporate structure here, we are run by NBC Sports. So my paychecks have actually always been NBC Sports.
Well, speaking of, and you brought up the corporate aspect of it, and I do have a question as it relates to corporate or the national platform of NBC Sports Network versus your local platform in Houston. The girls that you pull, is it a higher class when you were a post-game at Rio Tinto? Or are the Houston girls still winning out because of your consistent presence on Comcast Sportsnet?
I tell you, the women in both Salt Lake City and Houston are beautiful, and I wouldn't want to choose one over the other.
You PC'd the crap out of that, Sebi. Come on.
Well, you know, you can't offend. I don't have the luxury of being able to offend a large portion of women. That really cuts down into my
good point.
Into my perspective hopes.
Good point. In all seriousness, it was fantastic to see you last week on NBC Sports Network for the Friday match. Great match, Real Salt Lake versus Portland Timbers. And you didn't feel the need to give me the heads up that you were going to be behind the desk as the host of the festivity. So it was a great surprise turning on and then seeing you getting me all primed for the match. So just really, really proud of you, Sebi. Great job.
It was awesome. And you know what? Like, I could not have lucked into a better match to call and just to be a part of the call even and that the crew that you get to work with to sit on a desk with JP Della Camera. I mean, he's been calling World Cup games since I was two. You know, Brian Dunseth knows RSL so well and it was great to work with, and they're great people too. And then the matchup was just so awesome. You know, I hate to say this. I know this might upset some DC folks, but the other NBC game, which, you know, got the first NBC team, the proper team, was New York DC, and they sent us to do Real Salt Lake Portland. And I was pretty glad to be on, you know, quote unquote, the B team, because we really got the A game. I mean, it was such a good game. You knew it was going to be good. And I was so relieved because we really, in the pregame meetings, in the pregame show, we hyped it up. We said there's going to be goals. And what do you know, the team's delivered, and it was a great game, really a great performance from RSL more than anything else, I thought.
And I got to say, great performance by the host as well. few nervy moments, but overall, you were calm and composed over the microphone at Rio Tinto.
So you couldn't tell that I was sweating bullets and having my life flash before my eyes about 2 minutes to air?
Here's how I knew, or how I know that you were going to be okay and are going to be okay doing this as you move forward. Halftime, you threw it to a graphic that didn't come up. You had the moments. You reset yourself. You continued speaking. Then they threw the graphic up, and instead of backtracking back to the graphic, you kept pushing forward, throwing into Dunning, and I was like, this guy can roll with the punches. He's going to be all right.
Yeah, you know, we got our plug-in for Scion or
yep.
whoever it was, and I said, I've done my duty.
Let's move on.
We're rolling. Yeah, and you know what? It was true. I think it was stats that we were supposed to see.
Yeah.
I think I said, hey, this game doesn't need stats. It was good enough on its own.
Perfect.
And that's the kind of truth of the matter. The first half had enough elements of intrigue and controversy and great goals that – you know, it was a lot of fun. And I tell you, the setup at Rio Tinto, the scenics of that stadium are amazing. You're right at the kind of the front of the Wasatch Range there. And really, like, the supporter section right behind you pumps some energy. You know, people always talk about ESPN College Game Day, that kind of live setting.
Yeah.
I felt that energy. I hope it came across in the shows. When we had Javi Morales on in the post game, you know, to have them chanting Javi as we're doing the interview with them, you know, that's what it should be about. And I think that's one of the really cool elements of that stadium. And, you know, I had a ton of people from RSL hitting me up after the game, like, hey, NBC's got to come back here. And I was like, listen, man, I don't have that much weight, you know, like, I just hope they let me back on. And then I'll start asking, you know, I'll start declaring which games we ought to do. But Rio Tinto and that fan base, they came through big time, sold out the place. And it was an awesome atmosphere.
I like how you just threw yourself onto the B team. That's a done deal now. Sebastian Salazar on the B team.
I did not say that. On this weekend, I was fortunate enough to be invited to partake with some guys that are really just great soccer and specifically MLS broadcasters. And like JP, I mean, to work with a guy like that and then to get to know him and to hear some of the backstories, like, you know, yeah, he kind of guides you through a broadcast and tells you what to do and how to calm your nerves. But I always have to travel with a suit, and so I find myself wearing a suit because I can't pack it in a suitcase because it'll get wrinkled.
Yeah.
And he's like, you don't have to do that. And he showed me, hey, there's a spray you can buy, and you can fold it this way, and you can travel. So, like, I learned so much about beyond just television, but actually, like, how to be a professional adult.
Can we talk about other things other than you, Sebi? Jeez.
Yeah, I didn't want this to go down, but I guess it kind of did off the top. Huh?
I really want to get into the team that you cover, which is Houston Dynamo. And we were talking about getting you back on at some point, and we wanted to get you on in August. It just didn't work out with scheduling and stuff. And, you know, for me, August, and especially now that we're in September, is the time where the Dynamo start to actually put their best foot forward. It feels to me, especially the last few years, they just kind of tread water. They work out their kinks. They see who they are. And then once the playoff push begins, they, like the cream, they begin to rise to the top. And, you know, after the Sounders match, I was like, oh, we got to get Sebi on because the Dynamo push is about to begin. And I want to get his thoughts on what went into the push. And then they get their doors kicked in from Montreal, have a little bit of a struggle in CONCACAF Champions League before pulling out a result in the last match, and then have to scrape out a tie against Chicago. Why hasn't the push begun?
Well, you know, something that's plagued this team all along, there's kind of two things. I don't know that they don't have a consistent starting 11 that, you know, every day this is a guy, this is his role. We've seen different guys move from the outside of midfield inside. Brad Davis, Boniek Garcia, guys who can certainly play both roles. But at some point, you know, a team and a player and a formation needs an identity. I don't think they've settled on that yet, in large part due to international call-ups. There's been some injuries as well, but call-ups have just nailed this team. And right now they're without Jermaine Taylor, Boniek Garcia. And then, you know, the forward play has been very inconsistent. And it's been inconsistent because there really hasn't been much of a push. You've got Giles Barnes and Will Bruin, two guys who certainly have their qualities. And in back-to-back games, the home games against Columbus and Seattle, they were on fire. You throw out the Real Salt Lake game in the middle, that was a road match. But then they kind of go through these spells where you'll see them in games, and against Montreal, There were a few chances, but there really wasn't that consistent final third attacking threat, and they've missed that. I think they still need an element of pace. Kalen Carr is expected to at least be in the 18. He traveled to Chicago, wasn't in the 18. He's expected to be back Wednesday in the 18 against Columbus. That's huge. If he can come back and be 60% from, you know, right from the get-go of what he was, the player that dominated, not dominated, but was a big influence on MLS Cup, and worked towards 100% by the playoffs, that's going to be a major factor. The other issue is Omar Cummings. I mean, this is a guy that they brought in with major expectations. I don't know that they thought they'd get exactly 2011 Omar Cummings, but they're disappointed in what's happened. He struggled, just got back on the practice field now, still dealing with, you know, the issues from his preseason knee surgery. Just hasn't been able to kind of get over the hump. If at some point they get him back, that's great. But I think at this point, that's a really big if. You can't count on him and maybe even Carr to really be the impacts that you thought they were going to be at the beginning of the season. Though since you've got two of those guys, you say, okay, one ought to land and one ought to stick and do something for us and at least give an extra element to the attack, but also push Giles Barnes and Will Bruin for that playing time. Because right now, whether they produce or not, they're going to be the two starting forwards.
It's interesting that you would say that, because where I thought you would go, especially looking forward, is as they wrap up CONCACAF Champions League group stage stuff into the fall, that the depth of that team is really, really strong, considering that they don't have high-priced DPs. They have DPs, but not high-priced DPs, and they have really good depth. But what you said kind of contradicts that in saying they haven't trotted out a consistent starting 11, which kind of intimates, taking Carr and Cummings out, that they haven't settled on it. They have too much depth almost.
Yeah, I think that's, you know, too much depth. I hate to say that, because that's never a problem. That's always a good thing. But I think it's more an issue of you've got different guys who can do different things. And at some point, this may be the point of the season where they finally find that. As you said, Dominic Kinnear teams get good in September, better in October, and usually by November they're clicking and doing their thing and making a run. That's at least what's happened the last 2 years. The depth is there, but the depth is, you know, if you've got a guy that, like, let's look at their center back situation, right? You've got Bobby Boswell and Jermaine Taylor. So Jermaine Taylor's gone. Well, Eric Bruner gets hurt against Chicago. Now all of a sudden you're talking about Anthony Arena, a guy who, you know, basically was one of the last guys to make the roster. He's played in one game so far this year, albeit it was in Columbus, and it was a pretty good performance. But you're asking a rookie to step in and play center back potentially this game against Columbus in a situation where we're in the dead heat of the playoff race. That's a risky proposition. So, you know, you've got guys, you've got bodies, but I don't know when your two speed guys, Omar Cummings and Kalen Carr, aren't there. There's not much depth there in terms of players after those two that can give that element. So you got a lot of guys that can do a lot of things, but the two things you really need, a center back pairing and speed up top, those positions have been hit really hard by either injury or international call-up.
And the one guy that I did have circled to counteract that depth argument was Bobby Boswell, who is trotting out and just playing 90 in every single match, Champions League, no Champions League. He's playing 90, and that would be the guy that I would say to myself, okay, look, it's weird to say because I remember him as a 22-year-old rookie coming into the league, but he's not a young guy. Is there concern that he could be run into the ground as we get into the important fall months?
You know, I think Bobby knows at this point how to take care of himself. I think truly Dominic Kinnear knows how to take care of his older guys. If that was a concern with Bobby, you would have seen Bobby maybe missing some of those games, those CCL games here and there, if it was really truly a need. They've got some ways that they can cover guys at the central back position being out. You can move guys in and push other players out. Jermaine Taylor can play their outside or in the middle. Warren Cravall could potentially come back and play center back. So if they really needed to give Bobby a break, I think they could do that. You know, Bobby's one of these guys. He's not going to eat up a lot of ground. He's a smart center back at this point in his career. He works the system. He knows where to be. He positions himself well. That being said, that defense has had its issues. I mean, people will look at the goals against and they'll say, wow, Houston's defense, that's right what we expected. Listen, Tally Hall is the reason that Houston's defense has conceded as few goals as it has. He's having a phenomenal, phenomenal season. This guy is, I know we always want to talk about Nick Raimondo, and Nick is a great goalie in his own right, and Nick makes a lot of spectacular saves. Some of that is due to his height. And Tally doesn't make as many spectacular saves, but boy, I can't tell you how many times a game will end in a shutout or with just one goal scored by whoever Houston's playing, and you say, well, that easily could have been two or three, that Tally makes point-blank great saves.
Look at the save on against Chicago. He saved the match in like the 89th minute.
Listen, by the time it's 30 minutes into that game, Chicago could have been up 2 or 3 nothing without much. Mike McGee is one-on-one with him. There's a double save where he stops McGee atop the box right after beating Chris Rolfe to a one-on-one. I mean, the counter issue with that is that the Dynamo defense is getting beat more than I think people notice and more than they ever expected to get beat. There's still some issues back there, and I don't want to say just the defense. Defending is a whole 11 thing. You know, it starts sometimes in midfield. If guys lose their marks, they're not tracking back correctly, you get a numbers game, and then your defense is kind of left there hanging. But it's happened a lot more than in previous years, and yet still the goals against is amongst the lowest in the league, thanks in large part to Hall.
Talk to me about Alex Lopez. How are they working him in? What can I, the average MLS fan who maybe not is familiar with Alex Lopez's body of work, what can I expect from him in MLS as a member of the Houston Dynamo?
Young player, right? So I think it's more of a long-term view with him. You paid a seven-figure transfer fee, so this is a look for the future. He is a more, I'm not going to say number 10, because that would make Dominic Kinnear infuriated. He hates it when number 10, that doesn't, you know, what does that mean? The guy wears number 10. He's a little bit more of a central attacking guy. He can play out on the wing, but the Houston Dynamo don't really use a number 10. So if he's going to settle into that midfield role, it's going to be as, you know, a part of a matchup, whether it's him and Ricardo Clark, him and Adam Moffitt, him and potentially Warren Cravall, because Cravall has really been a big surprise this season. He's come a long way in year two of his MLS career, really bright spot for the Dynamo. And but Lopez has some flair, got a heck of a shot from long range, and is not afraid to use it. He can absolutely hit lasers, which a lot of guys on this team can. And Jason Johnson, Adam Moffitt, just to name a few. So there's some of that. I think it's going to be a while until we see him necessarily in a starting role. A lot of that depends, you know, how many minutes he gets is what happens with Ricardo Clark. He's been dealing with an illness for the last couple months. We don't have too many details. The team is being kind of mum about it. But he came out of that Seattle game. That was about 2 weeks after he came out of the Columbus game, very early. Just didn't feel right. Was having some issues. And, you know, if you're not feeling right and you play a game here in Houston, you're losing, you know, 7 pounds of water in a game, you're going to really feel wrong. So they've got to get Ricardo sorted out, because you can ask Adam Moffitt to do a lot of work, and Adam is certainly willing and capable. But Ricardo is really the heart of that midfield, the responsible, accountable guy in there that covers that ground. So not only does he have to be in there, but he's got to be healthy and fit to do the work that you expect from him.
You know me, Sebi. I always like to eyeball guys, young guys who may not contribute right away and may not contribute within a year. Suni Saad was a guy that I had eyeballed a while ago, and now he's starting to come into his own. I asked you last time about Brian Salazar and what can we expect from him. Last year, preseason, I was down at in Orlando at the Disney Classic, and I saw Warren Cravall, and I said, wow, this guy's very, very active, and didn't do much of anything last year. As you mentioned, he came into his own this year, playing in a number of different positions. Where do you see him ended up being his best position?
You know, it's funny you say that. We, you know, here in Houston, we talk about Warren and we wonder, does his versatility actually hurt him? You know, he can play so many different spots. He can play outside back. He can play central defense. He can play out on the wing. I think probably his best position is maybe in that central midfield role, not too different from Ricardo Clark. You know, a guy that eats up a lot of ground, wins a lot of 50-50 challenges, does a lot of the little stuff, and moves it quickly but dangerously. Gets the ball and finds the right people with the right pass. You know, he's not going to miss a lot of passes. He's just really precise. And he's pretty aggressive. When Warren gets the ball, a lot of younger players, you'll see, they'll look to go lateral or go back or take that extra touch to feel comfortable. Warren gets it, turns it upfield, and pushes the issue. And I really like that about him. I think not enough young, certainly American players do that. So that's something to watch for from him. But to tell you really, truly what his best position is now, it's really hard for me to say because we haven't seen him play one position enough to have a body of work that would really shed light on that.
Let's talk about Champions League, and we'll start with Houston's Champions League run so far, a win and a draw as they move forward. It trotted out kind of a B team or at least an A-minus team in both matches. Obviously, they're taking this seriously, so that's not the right way to ask, but are they really just hoping that they can get this group stage sewn up early so that they can focus on MLS playoffs?
I think you have to understand that the priority here is MLS playoffs. That's everywhere, and as it should be. You have to trust your second team if you're an MLS squad. Not your second team, I shouldn't say that. You've got to trust the guys in your 18, right? The 12 through 18, maybe a few other guys. They have to be able to get results against a W Connection and an Árabe Unido. That's just the bottom line. And MLS should be at that level at this point. The Dynamo were disappointed to go to Trinidad and not come away with 3 points there. It was a sloppy game, a really ugly game. And the one thing that you saw was you saw a lot of guys that hadn't played together. The lack of continuity in that game made it brutally hard to watch. The game here against Árabe Unido, the Panamanian side, was a disaster for many reasons. The refereeing was terrible, and I think it really, you know, impacted the game in a way. And, you know, give the Panamanians credit. They came in, they were on the stretcher, you know, coming off on stretchers, you know, five times in each half. The game stopped every 5 minutes. There was no flow, and they disrupted what the Dynamo were going to do. They got an early goal, and it was nervous. But eventually, there's more talent, even on the Dynamo reserves, than there is on Árabe Unido. That's just the bottom line. Cam Weaver, you know, scores a goal, pushes in another one off the defender that's marking him, and they get through. But I think any MLS team, if you're going to especially with how loaded Houston's August, September, and October schedule is, and how important those last three games are in October, you know, you've got to say, we have to rely on these guys. Otherwise, your A team, your potential starters are going to be out of gas when it really matters. And that's the thing that Dominic Kinnear does best. He manages players. So I think the results may not be pretty against these, you know, CCL group play opponents, but they don't need to be. You just have to survive, and that's what we're seeing so far. It's barely survival, but it's survival.
Before I let you go, we got to talk about the column that you just posted at pitchpass.com. And, you know, I keep talking about it, and you know, Pitch Pass is now more than just a podcast, and it's in large part due to Sebastian and his columns. It's an interesting read because it kind of takes you behind the scenes of a CONCACAF Champions League match. And, you know, the thrust of the article, and I don't want to give that away because I want people to go there and read it, but the thrust of Sebi's point is CONCACAF is kind of making Champions League a less enjoyable experience than what it could be. And you focus in on a couple of things. I think let's just focus in on one, and we'll leave the other two for anybody who may want to go to pitchpass.com. Talk to me about the media aspect of it and how CONCACAF makes it more difficult for even local media to do their thing and promote the match.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I work for a regional sports network. CONCACAF Champions League, especially in a place like Texas, is still not all that well understood. Sure, your Dynamo faithful love it, but you need to branch out beyond that. People need to understand what this tournament is about. We wanted to go live an hour and a half before the game. We're not showing the game. We're not infringing on anybody's on Fox's broadcast rights. And it wasn't a Fox rule. It's a CONCACAF rule that simply would not allow us to go live from the stadium an hour and a half before kickoff. So what we can't do then is I can't, as a soccer reporter, adequately promote the event, right? I can't explain to people, hey, this is why we're here. This is why there's this team from Panama here. This is what's at stake. Eventually, this could lead to playing a big-time Mexican team here in Houston, and eventually playing Real Madrid in the Club World Cup, and really jazz it up a bit, get people excited about it. They took that away from us, and then they wonder why on a Tuesday night, 1,500 people show up. On the other part of it is, you know, the Dynamo here broadcast their games on the radio. They do a really good job of it. Well, CONCACAF, and I'm going to say this, I think it's just a pure measure of greed. Wants an extra, I don't know what the number was, but an extra few shekels to, for what's called a rights fee to broadcast the game. So what they effectively end up doing is they say, okay, radio stations, you want to broadcast? Radio station says, well, yeah, but not for X amount of dollars.
Yeah.
Because we're not making money on this. We're doing it for the programming. So the radio stations don't do it. So now CONCACAF has lost not only the exposure of the radio stations, but anybody who wants to listen to it is simply cut out. And as a result, I think the tournament loses importance and loses its relevance to the markets, to the local markets where you need to sell tickets, which is at the end of the day what this is about. So it's kind of this backwards philosophy of, hey, let's try and make a couple $100 here. No, that's not what this is about. Build the tournament now.
Yeah.
Let's acknowledge it's still in the building phase. And then in 2, 3, 5, 10 years, you'll be filling stadiums for these matches.
And make a couple of million rather than a couple of hundred.
It's just foolish. And from a media perspective, and you know me, I'm going to bang the drum for soccer. But if you're going to make my job more difficult, suddenly then I start to question the importance of Champions League.
It's a great column. He's got a couple of more points as to how CONCACAF kind of dampens the game day experience if you're on site for a Champions League match. You can check out at pitchpass.com along with this podcast and everything else. Sebi, we didn't really get to talk about much about the rest of the league and, of course, our beloved DC United. So that means we're going to have you back on in the next few weeks to go around the league if you want to.
Absolutely. No, at any time. I love doing it. Love writing for pitchpass.com. And you got my number whenever you need. Although I will big time you now.
Thanks, man. I appreciate it. Take it easy.
All right. Later on, Red. Pitchpass.
Show information, go to pitchpass.com.